See in the first reading today something that in first glance seems very contrary to what we see in the gospel. And yet, we see that God relents from the punishment he intended upon his people. He is merciful. You know, just because one knows what should happen to somebody else in justice doesn't mean that they are evil or conniving. This people God had just drawn forth from Egypt in power and in strength. He had just opened the Red Sea in order to have them cross. And he swallowed up their enemies. He provided for their need in the desert. And after 40 days of the absence of Moses, they were ready to make their own God. The only reason they had life was because of God. But God is merciful. He is compassionate. He does not inflict upon them the punishment for their crimes. To be very clear about that. We come to the gospel text today and we see several parables. The first two are important because they reveal something that we don't fully understand. The question, if you had 100 sheep and one of them went away, leaving 99 to find the other in the desert place. We know that the sheep has value. Why? Because the shepherd goes to look for the sheep. But we don't fully understand the value of the sheep. Because they leave 99 to search for one. Do you fully understand, my brothers and sisters, the value that you possess before God? There are times, I believe, that we simply look at ourselves as a human being and dismiss ourselves as one among billions. But there is something that is revealed in these parables about the value of each and every human being. That it is not, okay, well, there's two human beings, you know, the value, let's add them up as if we're adding up sacks of grain. There is something about the human person being made in the image and likeness of God. Our destiny of being drawn into paradise, that we would have some unique and awesome value. We turn to the last parable, the one that we often know simply as the parable of the prodigal son. Jesus speaks this parable. Why? Because you have the scribes and the Pharisees who are the older son. You have all of the sinners and tax collectors who are the younger son. And Jesus is trying to speak to the hearts of the kind of family and household that God desires. Let us be very clear about what the younger son says to his father. Father, give me the share of your estate that should come to me. It seems pretty harmless in some sense, right? What he says. But what he is saying to his living father is, I want to live my life as if you were dead. You do understand that, right? I want to live my life as if you were dead, Father. The response of the Father to his request is unfathomable. But he goes ahead and divides his property and wealth and gives it to his son. But what we discover as the parable continues, it is not the father who is dead. The younger son, in leaving home and taking his possessions and wealth and going, he is the one who has now cut himself off from the father's house, the source of life. The younger son thought it was about wealth. He thought it was about property. He thought it was about things. The point of this parable is to reveal to us that it has absolutely nothing to do with any of these things, but it is all about relationship. It is all about God's relationship with us, his desire to draw us to himself, his desire to impart to us life and light and truth. Even the older son, what is he bent out of shape about? Well, because it's all about stuff. So even though he's willing to wait till his dad is dead, for him it's still about stuff too. So whether it's the tax collectors or the sinner or the scribes or the Pharisees, it's all about stuff. And Jesus is trying to reveal the heart of the matter, that it has absolutely nothing to do with stuff. It is about the invitation of the Father to his children to be in relationship with him. How does the younger son come to his senses? Does he have some epiphany of reason or mind, some pricking of his moral conscience? It's beautiful, isn't it? It's his stomach that brings about his conversion. His need to be fed, his hunger that makes him come to some clarity of thought and understanding. It's beautiful, why? Because it reveals that as a person, that there are many, many deep layers and levels to who we are that reveal our need for another. Even our physical hunger speaks of this need. And so he finally comes to his senses. He practices and prepares this lovely speech that he will give to his father. And he starts home. Now, the characteristics of the father, my brothers and sisters, only one who knows the father could tell this story. Only one who has seen the father, only one who knows the father, who knows his mercy, who knows his love, who knows his generosity of heart, could ever speak this parable. That is why it comes forth from the mouth of Jesus. Because he knows the Father, and his Father is the model of the Father in this parable. It says, while he was still a long way off, the Father caught sight of him. I have a hard enough time standing in the back of the church and reading the numbers on the board, let alone to be scanning the horizon as an older man searching for my son. What does it tell us? It tells us that every day since the day that this younger son left until the present day, the father has been looking to the horizon for the return of his son. He has been searching for him upon the horizon every day. And when he finally sees him, his heart is filled with compassion, and he runs to him. And when he arrives, he doesn't say, "Explain yourself. You've been practicing a speech, so have I. I've got something to tell you. I'm alive." No. What does he first do? He embraces him and kisses him. The son hasn't even spoken yet. He hasn't even said a word. And the father has already drawn him to his heart. He has hugged him, embraced him, kissed him. You can imagine the son holding, going, "Oh, hold on, Dad. I'm supposed to say something first." He's like, "Oh, yeah, okay, go ahead. Go ahead, say something. Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I no longer deserve to be called your son." Okay, good. All right, bring the finest robe. Bring a ring, put it on his finger, sandals upon his feet. Enough of this that you are not my son. Enough of this that you don't deserve. You are my child. Go and kill the fatted calf. I'm trying to think of what that means to our modern culture. It would be like if you, as a family, had like a savings account that you just kept putting money away until like there's a reason for a party, and then you have like a party fund. That's what having a fatted calf would be like. Yeah, you're feeding the calf before that day of the party, and there's like, woohoo, party came. Fatted calf's like, oh. Let us rejoice, for my son was dead and is now alive. The older son doesn't get it either. He thinks it's about property and things. But the reality is, it is about being in relationship with the Father. It is about receiving his love, remaining in his love, experiencing his love. Knowing that no matter what you do, mistakes that you make, you cannot lose his love. But his love is for you always. So now comes the hard part, my brothers and sisters. Do you know the love of the Father? Because the love that is spoken of in the gospel today is for you and for me. Do you know this kind of overwhelming, overflowing, unconditional love of the Father? Do you know him? Because just like the younger son, you could have lived with him your whole life and not even known him. The older son, not knowing his father. Do you know the love of the Father for you? And if not, why? What are the barriers that you put up? You know, Paul writes about it in several places. What can separate us from the love of the Father? Principalities, powers, life, death, sickness, disease. He just lists them, thing after thing after thing after thing, excuse after excuse after excuse. And he says, in none of these can we be separated from the love of God. For in all of these, the love of God conquers overwhelmingly. So then, my brothers and sisters, if we have not known the love of the Father, why? What are the barriers? What are the excuses that you use to keep the Father's love at bay? Well, I've done this and I've done that and I've done this. Let me get myself straightened out first. Let me get to the point where I can love myself first. And then, God, I will allow you to love me. I've said that many times in my life. I was a fool as well. What excuses do we use? Because if Paul were standing next to me today, who wrote the second reading, who admitted in writing that he was a blasphemer and a persecutor, arrogant, that he acted out of ignorance. And that above all, he epitomizes the sinner. Paul's basically saying, if you have excuses about sin and difficulty and error and misjudgments and all of those things, and you want to use them as an excuse to keep God's love from you, then you're wrong, because I have all of those excuses and more, and he has dealt kindly and mercifully with me. Paul is giving himself to us as an example and saying, in all of these things, the love of God has entered into my life, and I have been mercifully treated and changed and transformed by this love. All of our excuses, my brothers and sisters, are straw. I would use harsher language, but there are many children here present. They're straw. Basically, it comes down to this. We have a decision to make. The Father's love is for us. Jesus reveals this. I don't know how more clearly he can reveal this by his life, by his death upon the cross, by his resurrection, that God's love is for us, and he desires our good and not our destruction. And we are responsible to open our arms and to receive that love of God. But you know what I think the biggest fear is to doing so? We are afraid that we will change. We are afraid that if we say yes to God and we allow him to love us, if we open our hands to receive his love and accept his love for us, we know that we can no longer remain the same, and that our life will be different because of it. Does that ring true in anyone's heart? I think we've nailed it. I think we've hit it on the head. But as I said before, my brothers and sisters, God has come to reveal his love and to give his love, not to destroy us. And all of my attempts to change my life, to do the good that I wanted to do, to strive after doing all of these things that I couldn't succeed in, that I always failed in doing, that I never found myself in a place that felt lovable enough to allow God to love me. When we allow ourselves to be loved, it changes everything. And that which was impossible for us, that which was difficult for us, now becomes simply a response to being loved. And all of the fear and all of the weight and all of the anxiety that are with it and connected with it are now gone. And we are invited to remain in his love. The greatest thing that you can do to change your life is to receive this love of the Father that he desires to pour on each and every one of us. Why don't we do it? Why don't we receive this gift of love? My brothers and sisters, do not be afraid. Do not be afraid. Your Heavenly Father loves you. He desires your blessing and your good in all things. Amen.